The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Tim. What's up?
I survived Thanksgiving.
Did you now?
Yeah. Can you believe that's been over a week already?
Yeah. Was that just last week?
It was.
Wow.
It's now December and it's just too damn cold.
It is cold. And you know, one day it's 63 then, and the next day it's 36. So one of my students said to me, wow, the weather's dyslexic. I'm like, yeah, something like that. So for those of you who heard last week's interview with our effervescent friend, Inga Thompson, you probably quickly realized that we really did plumb run out of time. Not to worry. The interview kept going. You'll hear the last bit of it later in the show.
Good.
Just towards the end of the show. We're just going to play that last few minutes of it. There has been a lot of interesting chatter in the bicycle world on many, many levels over the past week. We're going to try and cover some of it in the news if we have time, because this week's show is a bit of a change-up.
I love change-up.
I know you do. So many of us here in the U.S. have been overwhelmed over the past week with specialty days. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, tell me.
Black Friday, which was evidently a bit of anemic this year. Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, and Giving Tuesday. Right?
Right.
Not like we all took out our checkbooks and went crazy all 4 days or any of those days. But I didn't want to be left out. So we're going to throw our handlebars into the ring and offer up a few ideas for charitable giving to bicycle nonprofits this week.
I like that.
I liked it, too. It was one of those epiphanies on one of my dog walks this week that that's what we would do. You know, I walk my dogs every day.
Yes.
Yes. So this week, we're going to present bicycle donation opportunities.
I like that. That's catchy.
Okay. We'll be speaking with four different people from four different bicycle nonprofits and asking them each the same set of four questions. Perhaps one of these organizations will pull at your little heartstrings as you write your checks for charity this year. Our first guest is Ruth Ann Renaud. She is the Director of Global Marketing for World Bicycle Relief. Ruth Ann just returned from Zambia, and she's ready to share what she saw there and tell us a little bit about WBR. Now, we've talked about World Bicycle Relief in the past, but this is right from the marketing mouth. Okay. Our second conversation is with Marilyn Price. So Marilyn is the founder and executive director of Trips for Kids. Since its inception, it has opened the world of cycling in the United States, Canada, Israel, and Sierra Leone for over 127,000 youth at risk. That's Wow. a lot of people, huh? We'll learn more about the organization. It has an Earn a Bike program and how to support one or more of the over 80 chapters operating, including one that just evidently opened here in Cleveland at St. Paul's Lutheran. Then we're going to talk with Kate Pallison. Now, you may remember we talked to Kate earlier in this year from People for Bikes. Well, People for Bikes this week celebrated its 1 millionth supporter to sign the pledge.
That's fantastic.
I know. And Kate's the one who's like been running around going crazy. Neither Kate nor her organization is new to the Outspoken Cyclist. As I said, People for Bikes has made some significant changes in the past year or so. They've taken on a lot of the important work in moving cycling forward here in the U.S. So we're going to talk with her and what the giving opportunity might be there. And then finally, we're going to talk with Nicole Preston, and she is the National Director for the Diabetes Association's Tour to Cure Rides. Now, I have a lot of customers and friends who ride one or more of the Tour to Cure rides, you know, all over the place. We've talked about the rising incidence of diabetes and how cycling can help to alleviate symptoms and to help keep some of the more severe problems at bay just by, you know, the exercise and getting on a bike. Nicole's going to give us an update on events for 2015 and how you can get involved if you wish. So it's a little bit different. Tour de Cure has its own little way of doing their rides. It's kind of cool. So we're going to head off to Chicago first, that toddling town. Yeah. And we're going to speak with Global Marketing Manager of World Bicycle Relief, Ruth Ann Renaud. Hello, Ruth Ann. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Happy holidays to you.
Oh, thank you, Diane, and happy holidays to you as well.
Thank you. Our show this week is about charitable giving and helping bicycle nonprofits. And World Bicycle Relief just kind of rose to the top. So tell us a little bit about your role and about the work of WBR.
Oh, terrific. Well, Diane, I joined the organization, in fact, just 2 months ago, and I serve as our Director of Global Marketing. And I must tell you, it's a pretty incredible job to have and a pretty amazing organization to then be part of. World Bicycle Relief is a nonprofit organization focused on mobilizing people through the power of bicycles. And our work, in particular, is focused on providing specially designed, locally assembled, what we call Buffalo bicycles, to entrepreneurs, healthcare workers, and students, predominantly based in sub-Saharan Africa. So what we are doing is providing the transportation capability for those individuals to be able to achieve their dreams and to be able to get a quality education and to be able to provide for their families and to create a better future. And I've got to tell you, it's a pretty great way to spend a day.
Well, and you're relatively new to the organization, so you had a little bit of baptism by fire and went to Zambia. Tell me about your experience there.
I was in Zambia in October for almost 10 days. I spent time with a group of donors and partners visiting our work in Zambia. So we spent a day at our local assembly plant, each being personally responsible for constructing our own bike that we then were going to ride for the balance of the week. That bike then was donated to a group of school children at the end of the trip. So you knew that you were building and riding that bike with a purpose. In addition to that, we spent several days learning about the programs and the actual communities in which our bicycle empowerment and education work is deployed. So we met with school leaders, with community leaders, and with students to see and understand how they lived, the distance that they had to cover each day, and to then to actually understand what a difference that a bicycle could make.
To date, do you have any idea of how many bicycles have been donated by World Bicycle Relief?
In the 10 years since our organization came into existence, we have now provided more than 200,000 bicycles.
Wow.
Which is really quite incredible. That's a big number. We just passed that milestone this fall.
What are the most pressing concerns for World Bicycle Relief? What is it that you need to accomplish to move things forward some more?
Well, one of the biggest issues for us is being able to translate awareness into action. You know, and that's about being able to inform and inspire, you know, those individuals like you, Diane, and myself and other cyclists and other people that we might know that care about issues related to education and social justice and opportunity. So the big issue that we face is that in many of the countries and communities where we look to do our work, distance is the barrier to an education or to access to health care. And being able to raise enough funds and to have enough motivated supporters coming alongside us to help us get bikes into the hands of those that need them, that's the work that we're getting after every day.
You're at 200,000 donated bikes so far. Do you have a set goal for each year, like what's going to be happening in 2015?
Well, I can tell you that for this year in 2014, we will have deployed into the field in excess of 55,000 bikes just in this one year.
Wow.
So what we also are having happen is this multiplier effect, quite frankly. So as we look at the accomplishments of 2014, we certainly expect and hope that that will continue to multiply going into 2015 and beyond, because quite frankly, the reality is the need is quite large. You know, our goal is to be able to do it responsibly and take it to scale in communities where for every deployment that we do to a school, for example, we are generally looking to deploy at least 200 bicycles at a time so that those students that live at a distance of more than 2 to 3 miles walking distance from the school, which is generally more than half of the school population, can get there much more quickly and prepared and ready to learn. So again, the numbers for us are all about being able to do this work in large enough deployments to materially affect those students in a particular school, a family in a particular community, so that each community, one after another, can begin to thrive a bit more.
Let's tell our listeners how they can find out more about World Bicycle Relief and when they're doing their charitable giving this year, perhaps include you.
Oh, and I hope that they do consider this, and I would encourage folks to go to our website, which is worldbicyclerelief.org. On our website, you will find the opportunity to view videos that will showcase the stories of our students and the entrepreneurs and even the mechanics that are part of these programs and part of these initiatives in countries from Zambia to Kenya to South Africa and other parts of the world. In addition, you know, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and you can be part of the conversation. Important to know, between now and year end, you know, anyone who chooses to make a donation, a contribution to World Bicycle Relief between now and December 31st, all donations are being matched dollar for dollar.
Wow.
And it's a very tangible contribution.
I wish you a lot of luck with your fundraising efforts and going forward. I know that World Bicycle Relief has been a really big driving force in Africa. I'm really, really pleased to hear that things have moved along so quickly. 55,000 bikes in 1 year is a lot of bikes. So I hope you have a wonderful holiday. Thank you so much for joining us on the show this week.
Thanks, Diane. Take care.
Bye-bye. Ruth Ann Renaud joined me from their offices at World Bicycle Relief in Chicago.
When you actually hear the actual numbers of bikes that they put together, on Twitter, World Bicycle Relief had a sort of a fundraiser for Giving Tuesday, and they were able to raise the fund 754 bicycles in 24 hours.
That's pretty cool. That's a great number.
It was a great use of social media, and that was a great way to do that, and it's great to see that.
All right, we're going to take a real quick break, and then we'll be right back to speak with Executive Director of Trips for Kids, Marilyn Price, as we talk about giving in the time of need. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. Hello, Marilyn. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Happy holidays to you.
And same to you. And thanks so much for inviting us.
Our show this week is about charitable giving and helping nonprofits. So you're involved with cycling and kids, and that works for me. Tell us a little bit about the work of Trips for Kids.
Okay. Well, we started in Marin as a program to introduce kids who would never have the opportunity to do the mountain biking that we do. We wanted to introduce them to the natural world on a vehicle that they all love, which is the bicycle. Without a doubt, they do love it. We also wanted to instill in them a love of the outdoors, an appreciation of nature, and a desire to protect our environment. Those were some of the main reasons for starting the program. And we've added to it healthy exercise, the importance of good nutrition, and also all along the way, their personal development, that we can help them as they grow just to feel better about themselves.
Who are these kids who are being helped by your programs?
Well, they are all, and that's the population we decided to restrict ourselves to as a nonprofit. They're all kids, and we phrase it now, they would not otherwise have these opportunities. They can come from all kinds of backgrounds. We kind of term it, you know, at risk. They could be low income. Kids whose parents or friends or whatever they're not able to provide the kids with the experiences that we do. And the age is, we recommend 10 to 17, can go below, can go above, but 10 to 17 is about the age that we serve, and kids from all different backgrounds. Of course, our population is mostly, you know, the minorities in our country that wind up participating.
Well, you started in Marin, and you now have over 80 chapters. What does a chapter do, and how do they then, you know, are able to use funds to do the work?
Okay, and the chapters, the way we have set it up, the chapters all have their own 501c3. They're all an independent nonprofit.
Uh-huh.
They link to us by, we share our name, we share our logo, so they're all Trips for Kids Cleveland, Trips for Kids Seattle. They share the name and logo. They share our mission in that they are primarily taking the population that we serve on mountain biking. They can do other activities too, but that's their primary mission. And they are financially, they raise their own funds. We help them get started. Every new chapter gets 5 bikes, courtesy of whoever is our bike sponsor. Right now it's Raleigh. They get 5 bikes. We send them 10 helmets. We send them a care package of other things. We help them, if they do have to start, form their own nonprofit, we help them get their nonprofit started. And our main push is to get chapters started. We have started 120 chapters. We have 85 in existence today. You don't know who's really going to be able to stick in with it, who's able to grow, unless you can start a lot of chapters. And there's a lot of variables that's going to go into whether they are able to be successful or not. So I like to start lots of chapters.
It's like with volunteers. If you need 30, you get 50, and maybe
right.
20 will show up. Oh, I understand how attrition works in those situations. So what are the most pressing concerns for Trips for Kids right now?
Well, right now, what we've been working on now for a few months, we've got a few more months to do this. One of our board members is helping us with a strategic plan. We've realized we've grown and grown and grown, and for the past several years, we're kind of at a holding point. We want to grow beyond that, and we want this year to be our year of growth, where we can have a plan in place. We have to raise lots of money for it, because as you may know, you know, in order to do something really well, you've got to have good people. We need better PR. We need more outreach. We've got more curriculums that we develop. We have a lot of work to do. We've got a good model. We've been able to replicate it. But my dream is someday we are, in the eyes of the public, we are like the Boys and Girls Club of bicycling. You know, we're somewhat there now, but we've got a long way to go. And that's our big challenge.
That's kind of a nice goal. I like that.
Well, in doing that, you're obviously getting more kids on these rides, many of who've never even been out of the city before. It's really kind of neat. There's kind of a universal thing that I've seen. I get articles or quotes or talk to the chapters, and it's like they're accomplishing the same things that we do. It just, you get the kid and the bike and you're out there or working with them on Earn a Biker programs or whatever. There's something that just kind of happens. It's got a life of its own. And to me, it's kind of like the magic of the bike and the outdoors and nature and just getting kids out there.
What is the Earn a Bike program?
Well, that we started in Marin, and that's where kids can come after school on the weekends. They learn how to work on bikes, and they earn points toward their own bikes. Not all of our chapters have them. We've got it in Marin, and several of the chapters have now followed suit. We also have in Marin our bike thrift shop, which is another wonderful model. It supports 60% of our expenses. It's a true green business. The industry donates to us. People in the Bay Area donate to us. People around the country will even package and send us their items that they can't use. We refurbish it, and we sell it in our shop. And it brings in lots of money. It's not necessarily the kids program, but it supports the kids program and is environmental. And that's one of the reasons I started this. I wanted to have an environmental organization.
So how can people learn more about Trips for Kids? What's your website?
Our website is all spelled out, tripsforkids.org, TRIPSFORKIDS.org.
And you are a 501c3, so it would be a non-profit and charitable donation. I imagine it's tax deductible if somebody's interested in supporting it.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, I think it sounds like an interesting program. I hope our listeners do, too. And I appreciate you talking with me today. Marilyn Price, she's the executive director of Trips for Kids in California. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful holiday and good luck with your fundraising for 2015.
And thank you so much for inviting us.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well there, Marilyn Price from Trips for Kids. What do you think?
Another neat program. And I saw from their Twitter account that they announced their new chapter, Trips for Kids, in the Old Brooklyn Bicycle Club here in Cleveland, Ohio.
Very, very cool. And
they have a really cool honorary board for Trips for Kids. Anybody that has Huey Lewis, Bonnie Raitt, Carlos Santana, and Pete Townsend can't be all that bad.
No, boy, I guess not. Well, on that note, we are going to take a break. You are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And you are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist, and it's time for news. What you got, Mr. Tim?
Well, a lot of times when cyclists end their career, they just retire and, you know, they go into the television booth or something like that.
Or they fade away.
Yes, not Nasser Bouhanni. Nasser was the Stage 10 winner of the 2014 Giro d'Italia.
Well, he's young.
He's young. He's only 24. He's planning ahead. So in an interview with the French newspaper, L'Equipe, the 24-year-old insists he'll stop cycling in about 8 years in order to make his move into the ring. That's the boxing ring. He's been using boxing as a training method during the offseason in an attempt to improve his fitness for the 2015 season, and he plans to take boxing as far as he possibly can.
Boxing's not my favorite sport.
No, I don't.
On the other hand,
I understand it, but...
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Can we turn to something a little different?
Yes.
All right. We recently interviewed Mia Kohut, who's the publisher and, well, executive editor-in-chief, as I remember, of Momentum Magazine. Well, this week, Momentum Magazine published a really cool graphic. It's 5 reasons why riding a bicycle is safe. Each of the 5 reasons is backed up by the statistical data and information that put it, you know, up there as one of the 5. It is worth a look-see. If you want to see the graphic, it's momentummag.com/cyclingissafe. You know, if somebody needs to ask you a question, well, yeah, it's safe because, and there's a graphic about, you know, how safe it is compared to driving a car, walking, and then some other things, 4 other things. So it's pretty cool.
So Vincenzo Nibali, Astana, was simply a lapse in judgment.
Wait, the 5 people were popped for drugs over a short period of time? It's
yes.
A lapse of judgment on whose part?
Yes. And so that lapse in judgment actually may cost them their license for 2015.
Does not surprise me in the least.
The UCI is allegedly looking into that to see what that's, you know, whether it's an automatic disqualification for the season.
There is a closed group on Facebook called Doping. It does not have tons of members. Boy, I'll tell you, it really takes doping to task. I am a member. I pretty much keep quiet. I want to just see what they have to say. But they had a rousing discussion this week, very interesting, that I'm going to look into in depth to see if I can't put something together from the different people who were part of that discussion. Really
interesting. This is also interesting. It's something I hadn't thought about. The contracts that some of the other riders have require the team to be at that level and to be in certain events.
Right.
And if that voids their contract, they end up riding someplace else. But certainly not a lapse in judgment when the UCI decides to come knock on your door and say hi.
Hi, we're not renewing your license this year. All right, so now I know you have this as a news item. I have it as a news item because it's really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Norway is reintroducing their tramp, and they're renaming it the Cyclo Cable. Now, it's a mechanized lift. It's going to take you uphill at a 1.5 meters per second. It's meant to offer a boost up a steep grade, and the cable was first introduced like in the 90s. They just refurbished it and rehashed it and are now making it so that it is globally available. So they're going to actually turn it into a real product. So you stand to the left of this in-ground system and you put your right foot out and something grabs the bottom of your shoe and all you do is stand. And it literally, you're straddling your bike and it literally, I think, do you have your other foot on the pedal?
Yeah.
You have your left foot on the pedal, and it just kind of glides you up a hill.
It's a sort of a, as you said, a plate that you just put your foot on, and it'll actually pull up the hill. It'll do six riders at one time.
That's what I couldn't understand. So this one was, I think, 130 meters long or something like that?
427 feet.
Okay.
I didn't want to do the math.
Well, I thought they said it in meters, but okay, I think I'm close on that one. So you really need to see it to understand, because I'm not much of a mechanical engineer. I had to watch it to the very end to see how that plate works with your shoe.
I think it's just like an escalator. It's just that it doesn't climb. The escalator just stays on the pavement and just moves up.
It just glides on up.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it is refinery29.com, and just type in cyclo-cable, and you'll see it. It's very, very cool. I thought it was cool.
It's cyclocross season, so Felt Bicycles recalls 2015 F65X and F85X cyclocross bicycles. If you have one of those, go back to where you got it or take a look at their website. The reason they're recalling them is they're having issues with the frame breaking.
Well, yeah, that's a problem.
That's a big problem.
And those are felts?
Yes.
Felt bicycles? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, maybe we'll post something on our Facebook page to remind people, because recalls are really important as far as I'm concerned, especially if the frame can break. You can get hurt. We haven't done a bad one in a while, and unfortunately, this is a bad one. It's from November 29th. Olivia DeGennaro from KSBY News posted it in California. Cyclist and driver identified in fatal crash near Paso Robles. The California Highway Patrol is releasing new information about the crash that killed one bicyclist and left another severely injured. Investigators say that the driver of a GMC Yukon hit the two riders at about 3 p.m. near the intersection of Adelaida Road and Nacimiento Lake Drive. California Highway Patrol released the hospitalized man's identity on Saturday. He is Lawrence P. Chong, age 59, of Seal Beach. They have not released the woman's identity. She died on the scene. Both cyclists were from out of town. CHP identified the driver as Joseph A. Mondo, 18, from Paso Robles. Mondo told deputies he had his cell phone on his lap. It fell to the floor as he was driving. He reached down to pick it up and said the car in front of him had stopped. He swerved to avoid a collision and hit the two cyclists. So he wasn't texting, but he was distracted.
Right.
That's not my favorite story, but I just thought it was interesting that, you know, once again, a cell phone was involved. All right. Tell me something better.
Let's go with this one. We talked about Lance Armstrong failing at something he was trying to do.
I think it was a beer run, as I remember.
Yes, it was the beer one. And I actually found this. NPR was reporting on this, which was really interesting.
Okay.
In a dizzying finish, American scientist Elizabeth Herndon set a new women's record, world record, in the beer championship in Austin, Texas last night, breaking a tight field, obliterating the previous mark by 11 seconds. I just thought if a scientist could do this and break the record, it's a shame that Lance couldn't. Just an opportunity to get back
couldn't
at Lance.
Couldn't or didn't.
Awesome. I don't know, he quit. So there was something interesting, and I saw this in a couple places. I wasn't sure the first time I saw it, but apparently there was an interview with U2's guitarist, The Edge. They were just talking about their upcoming tour, and the interviewist asked why there weren't more photographs or evidence of the incident that happened. And The Edge said, you know, when Bono goes cycling, he likes to dress up as a Hasidic Jew.
Seriously?
That's the part that got my attention, and I don't understand why anybody would even bring that up. But
unless it's true.
Well, yes, unless it's true.
At which point, then you have to say, huh?
From the guitarist,
yes.
The Edge, he said that Bono's actually in a situation where he basically can't move. He's out of the hospital. He's at home, but it's going to be several months before he can get up and around and do other things.
Man, he really must have messed himself up, as
yeah.
they said.
Yeah, he said it's almost just like he was in a car accident with how bad that it was.
I wonder how fast he was going.
I don't know.
Or what he hit.
That's
you know, you could hit something that doesn't move, like a bridge abutment or something, and you can get hurt pretty badly.
That's about the strangest, weird news that I've come across lately. So.
All right. I think on that note, we're going to take a break. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit doddcamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And you are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. I think it's time to move on. And we're going to move on to Colorado. And we are going to speak with Kate Pallison. And we spoke with her when she was actually home in Akron the last time visiting. But she's back in Colorado celebrating the 1,000,000th supporter at People for Bikes. So she should be all rah-rah. Hi, Kate. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Happy holidays and congratulations on your 1,000,000th supporter.
Thank you. It's an exciting moment for us.
How did that happen?
So it's been the result of, you know, 4.5 years of hard work and, you know, contributions from the industry and other bike groups. So when we set out in 2010 with this goal to get 1,000,000 people to pledge their support of better biking, it seemed pretty far off, but we made it happen.
Well, it's really, really cool. Very, very cool. And in line with supporting People for Bikes and bicycle opportunities for charity, this show is about charitable giving and helping nonprofits that are involved with cycling. Tell us about the work of People for Bikes. It has changed somewhat in the past couple of years and expanded.
That's correct. Our goal is to make riding better for everyone. And we do that through a few of our programs. You just mentioned our People for Bikes campaign. So we're trying to engage every single rider out there and get them involved with advocacy. And then we also have programs like our Green Lane Project that is catalyzing the installation of protected bike lanes across the country. And we also have a community grants program that gives small grants to cities and local groups to build everything from bike lanes, bike paths, to mountain bike parks, single track trail, and help them run advocacy campaigns.
So if somebody is interested in supporting cycling on almost any level other than competitive racing, they can do that through People for Bikes, it looks like.
Correct. You are about all types of riding, all types of riders, and it's, you know, there's more than one way to enjoy riding a bike.
What are the most pressing concerns for People for Bikes going forward into 2015?
You know, we're really focused on safety and what we call interested but concerned. We are, you know, we want people who are scared about riding or nervous about riding to feel good about it and to want to get out at all or more often. So that's why we're focusing a lot on building protected bike lanes, because we know that sometimes a simple stripe of paint on the road isn't enough for most people to feel safe riding a bike. So that's what we're concerned about going into 2015.
Is there a sort of master plan for protected bike lanes throughout the country, or is each state or community sort of making plans on their own and then you come in when asked?
Yeah, so that's the role we're trying to play, is to be a connector between all the cities and communities installing these lanes. There's awesome stuff happening in local communities, and our Green Lane project is trying to be a catalyst for that. So people can share knowledge, share resources, and make it happen faster than it could on their own.
Do you have any idea of how many protected bike lanes are, in terms of miles or numbers, are already in the U.S.?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've been doing some research on that, and the predicted count by the end of 2014 is a little over 200 of these bike lanes, and that figure has just quadrupled since 2010, when there were maybe about 60. So we've seen a big spike in these bike lanes in the past few years, and we're hoping that that only continues.
Is there any idea of how much it costs to put in, say, a mile of protected bike lane, so that people can sort of gauge what that endeavor might be if they wanted a protected bike lane from, say, point A to point B?
You know, I don't have an exact figure for you, but the great thing about these lanes is that they are really inexpensive compared to other types of roadway improvements, because you can use, parked cars or just simple plastic posts, or even in New York City, they've been using planters. So they're not super expensive to install compared to other types of improvements.
So basically, you have the roadway, you have some sort of obstacle like parked cars or these planters, and then the lane is next to the curb as opposed to next to the traffic.
Correct.
Got it. Okay, so they're in between. You also, and I'm trying to remember what this was, there was some sort of big project that somebody was brought on to handle for lobbying, as I remember. How is that going, and what are the hopes with that, given what's going on in Washington, which is pretty much nothing?
Yeah, so in, D.C., we are looking at another federal transportation bill next year, and things have been pretty quiet there for us, at least as far as, engaging, asking riders to, write Congress and help us with this transportation bill, which we did a lot a couple years ago. But we're seeing that things are going to start heating up next year, and so that's why we're really glad that we have a million people behind us to take action when we need them to.
Yeah, that's a nice number. A nice big round number and growing, I'm sure. So lastly, let our listeners know how they can get involved with People for Bikes, and if they want to make a donation for their year-end charitable giving, how they might do that.
Sure. So you just go to peopleforbikes.org to add your name and give us your email and zip code if you haven't yet. We'll keep you up to date on local alerts for bicycling, national issues, easy tips and tricks to make your ride better. And if you would like to donate to People for Bikes, you can do that by hitting the donate tab on our website. And we'd love your year-end contribution.
Well, Kate, thank you so much for talking with me and adding to our wonderful charitable giving program this week. I hope you have a wonderful holiday, and we'll talk again in the new year.
Thanks. Have a great ride.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. Kate Pallison joined me from her office in beautiful, sunny Boulder, Colorado today. People for Bikes met their 1 millionth person goal to sign the pledge that we are going to support cycling in the U.S. We are going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back and talk with Nicole Preston from Tour to Cure. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. Hi, Nicole. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Happy holidays.
Hello. How are you?
I am good. Thank you. Our show this week is about charitable giving and helping nonprofits that are involved in some aspect of cycling. And I know that the Diabetes Association, diabetes.org, has its Tours de Cure. And you are the director. Tell us a little bit about how Tour de Cure works and when those events were established.
Well, the events were established in 1991, So we're coming up on our 25th anniversary next year. We'll be celebrating that in 2016. And so we have about 85 events around the country now in about 44 states. The events are structured to be for everyone. So they're mostly one days. We have a few 2 days and longer challenges, but they're mostly one day events. And they mostly have about five routes, 4 to 5 routes. So typically there's a very short family route. It may be 5 or 10 or 12 miles. Then a short route, maybe a 25 and a middle, you know, 35, 40, maybe a metric century and a century, something like that. Depends obviously on the geography of each city, but more or less there's a family, a short, medium, longer, and up to a century ride. So really something for everyone. And everybody can participate. So those routes are all staggered. They don't all leave at one time. The longest start first. And that way everybody can come back at the end and enjoy the party.
And there is a party.
There is a party at the end. It's a complete day. We really, there's a breakfast offered at the start. There is food and hydration at the rest stops throughout the course. You know, every 15 miles on average, there's a rest stop with snacks and food and some fun. Our volunteers like to do nice, you know, fun themes and make it fun for the riders. And then they come back to the party, a full lunch. We usually have bands, live entertainment. There's, you know, kid zones for the kids. We have team tents for the team, so the teams can all congregate together and have a good time. There's massage therapy, the works. So, you know, it's really a great day. Teams can participate as the various members come back. They can all come back and congregate together and enjoy the festivities. So it's a lot of fun.
Who is the typical person who would participate in a Tour to Cure ride? Are the actual people who have diabetes riding as well as support from family and friends?
Absolutely. So the typical person is really anyone versus the longer routes. Because we have those choice of routes and the shorter routes, it's really anyone can come out. People who may not consider themselves cyclists per se, but like riding their bike. So the shorter routes allow for that. So we have all ages, from the very young to, you know, to the oldest. You know, families, there are a lot of families with young kids riding either in Burleys or, you know, under their own power on their own bikes. So it really is open to everyone. And then we have our special program for Red Riders, people who are riding with diabetes. So whether they have type 1 or type 2 diabetes, our program is called the Red Riders, and it's to celebrate how they are living life and managing their disease well and, you know, doing great in terms of their exercise and cycling. So they get a special jersey that says, "I ride with diabetes" on the back.
Really?
Yeah, a special red jersey. And we have a programmer at the beginning of each route that goes out. The announcers will say, "Okay, everybody, practice. When you see somebody in the Red Rider jersey out on the course, you go, 'Go, Red Rider,'" you know.
Right.
So everyone's always yelling, "Go, Red Rider," you know, throughout the day as people are making their way around the course. So it's really fantastic to see people who are out and they're, you know, they may be riding their first 10 miles or they may be riding their first century, but they have that sense of accomplishment of, you know, getting out, riding their bikes and doing really well.
How much money do the Tour de Cure events raise for the Diabetes Association?
Yeah, in total, we raised nearly $29 million last year.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, over 85 events. So it's really... It's a great number, but unfortunately the number of people with diabetes is a much, much bigger number. There's nearly 30 million people with diabetes in the United States, America, adults and children, and another nearly 80 million who have prediabetes, meaning they have elevated blood sugar levels, and if they don't, you know, do something to better manage it, they can develop diabetes in the short term. So it's a really, really big number and the cost of diabetes is over $245 billion, you know, for the U.S. alone.
Yeah, it is huge. Are there cures on the horizon? Are there some sort of medical modalities that are starting to either keep it in check? And I know exercise and diet are huge factors, but are there other things that they're beginning to find out using all this money about diabetes that may begin to, A, lower the rate, and B, get it under control?
Yes. So the American Diabetes Association, we work for both type 1 and type 2. So type 1 is not, you know, necessarily modifiable by diet and exercise as much as type 2 is. So for that, for both, honestly, we are doing research. So the association invests heavily in research, and we have an exciting new research program recently called Pathway that really funds the younger researchers with great ideas, to really kind of find some breakthroughs. And then we have our traditional research that goes on, and that has provided all of the things that have made it easier to manage the disease over the years. They're the insulin pumps that people wear now that can be programmed, and they can give the insulin injections, you know, on a more automatic basis rather than having to do the needle injections. And,
right.
You know, there's a lot of modalities, as you say, that have been come from all of the money raised and gone into all of the research and to all the medical work to help people manage it better until there's a cure. So we're always ultimately trying to find that cure. But until then, helping people live better with the disease.
So in 2015, will there be more than 85 events? Or are you still at around 85?
Yes, still around 85.
I know we have one here in Cleveland.
Indeed. Instead of growing the number of events, we'd like to grow the number of people participating in them. So we're always trying to, you know, just get more people involved. People enjoy the events, and so getting the word out to come on out and join us and enjoy a great day of riding.
So how can people find out more about the Tour to Cure and the Diabetes Association?
They can visit our website, which is diabetes.org/tour, T-O-U-R. So all the information there is on our website. For more information about diabetes, they can go to the main website, which is diabetes.org, and or call our 800 number, which is 1-800-DIABETES.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for talking with us. This is our charitable giving show, and so we wanted to include Tour de Cure because it's cycling related. So I hope you have a wonderful holiday. Good luck with your 2015 events. Raise lots of money. Let's cure diabetes.
Thank you so much, and happy holidays to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Nicole Preston joined me from the offices of the Diabetes Association in Virginia. We are going to take another quick break, and then we will be back to finish our interview with Inga Thompson. Talking with Inga Thompson, as promised. This is part two of our interview. Okay, you had this story that you wanted to tell. Tell me the story.
Okay, so I'm doing a poll here, and it's about 50-50 with people. And it is, okay, who has those dreams? It's a dream where you go to school, you go to work, you're somewhere public, and you realize you forgot to put your clothes on.
Oh, my hand's up. I have a recurring one, and it's really weird because then you try to hide.
And you're trying to hide, and you do all these things. And then in the back of your mind, you're like, it's just a dream. But it's so real in your dream because you're horrified. Well, my worst nightmare became true. Where?
Oh, my. Let's hear it.
Okay. So at the Hall of Fame, you know, it clearly says that it's a black tie event. And then little parentheses, it says optional. Well, the best place in the world for me to go clothes shopping is my mom's closet. I mean, the woman doesn't even own a pair of blue jeans or shorts. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah, right.
So we go through all the clothes and I pick out this dress that, you know, easily is a $5,000 dress. I mean, it's beautiful. And you know what? I try it on and the light streaming in from the outside, this is important. Try it on, dress looks good, but it needs to be altered a little bit. So, you know, that day we go to the fitters and, you know, different set of lighting, you know, light from all different angles and directions. This is important. Looks great. Go back the next day. It's been altered. Try it on. Different fitting room, different lighting. It all looks really, really good. You know, it looks great. You know, and so right before the Hall of Fame, I put it on. Bright lights, a lot of people standing there. Nobody says anything. This is where I hate my friends. So we go, you know, we drive 10 miles to, you know, the hall or where this event is at. And looking into this room, and there's got to be 150 plus people in there, and there's a stage and there's lights. And right before I walk in the room with my dress and I've got on my 3-inch heels, there's a full length mirror. And right before I walk in, I realize my dress is sheer.
Oh my God. And you don't have a slip on under it.
It had a built-in slip, but the built-in slip was sheer. And
oh, no.
I'm standing there absolutely horrified, horrified. The only thing that saved me is that I wore boy shorts. Of course, they're black because I didn't want panty lines. And I'm standing there just horrified, you know, and it's just like your heart stops beating and then it stops beating. You realize it's sticking up in the back of your throat. And I stood up just a little bit taller, and I said, I guess you're going to wear this dress like you own it. And I walked in there and just absolutely like, and my brother, he leans over and he whispers, he goes, and I'm like, do you see that? He goes, yeah, it's kind of a Hollywood sexy sheer kind of, you know, thing. And I'm like, I'm wearing this dress. And he goes, you better. You don't have a choice now.
Oh, my gosh. And he's probably the only one who acknowledged it when you asked him, right?
He is the only one that acknowledged it. And thankfully, the other half of my friends are as clueless as I am. They never noticed it.
Obviously, they look very closely at you, yes?
So some people did, some people didn't. Thankfully, they're all very kind souls. And they said, yeah, it was a Hollywood sexy, glamorous, sheer type of look.
Uh-huh.
And So that's my story of my ultimate nightmare coming true. I have to speak
goodness.
In front of 150 people naked.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what to say to that. That has not happened to me, at least not yet, and I hope it never does. Well, I'm glad that nobody made fun of you. What happens at the Bicycling Hall of Fame? So this induction, what does that mean now? There's a plaque up on the wall, and are any of your jerseys or medals or anything there?
Yeah, I got a little plaque on the wall, and then they borrowed for the next year. They'll put up a display. They took four of my World Championship and Pan American silver medals, and so they'll have those up on display for the year, and then I'll get those back. I guess they just have, you know, troves and troves of stuff, and so I said, we'll just keep it here for a year, and I'll take it back. But it was wonderful going into the Hall of Fame, and I think that the biggest joy of being there was being around George Mount.
He is unbelievable, isn't he?
Absolutely unbelievable, man. I have never laughed so hard.
He holds nothing back. Nothing.
Absolutely nothing back. I'm like, what a great promoter for the sport. There needs to be another spot for him.
Oh, he needs to be part of the women's team. Because he would be awesome. And he is the only guest I've had more than once on the show who has been bleeped every time he's on the show. Because he just can't keep his mouth shut. He's awesome. I love him.
I have never met him before, but he always was an idol. And then to get to meet him and see the same passion and being outspoken. And we were cracking up about how I call it timeout chair, you know, to not speak about the doping. And right before the event, that I got pulled aside, and they're like, "Okay, at the when you give your speech, you're not going to talk about doping, are you?" And I'm like, "No, absolutely not." You know, I said, "It is why I'm here, though, because I did put up a stink, and you guys re-remembered who I was." But the induction is about saying thank you to those that made it possible for me to be here, not to those that kicked me out of the sport. You know. And,
well, were you kicked out, or did you choose to walk away?
No, I got removed.
You know, it's been a while since we did that interview, and I think I do remember the conversation. Yeah. Yeah, you know, today I'd be afraid for you a little bit.
Why is that?
You're more outspoken today, and I don't think you would put up with it, and you would let people know why and what happened.
You know what? that is exactly what I wanted to what I was hinting at, touching at when I said I'm older and I'm wiser. And I know now not to be, and that was my comment exactly. The big guys don't scare me anymore.
There's nothing they can do to you. There's nothing right. they can say about what you had to say and what you experienced, because it was all from your perspective and you no longer are involved in a way that would hurt them, other than going forward, listening to what you have to say and taking heed. I think it would be important what you had to say.
And, you know, and now I'm like when I looked back, I didn't realize the power that I had.
Yeah. Well, you were young.
I was young. And now, and so the last 20 years, I'm like, you know, I didn't believe that I had any power back then. And for 20 years, I still didn't believe I had any power. And then when I started speaking out about cycling and the doping, it has really kind of started to sink in. It's like, you know what? I have a powerful voice here.
Yes, you do.
And what a waste. What a shame if I didn't step back into the sport and try to promote women. That would be a huge waste of my talents and my abilities, because now I have a knowledge of the sport, I have a passion of the sport, and now I have age and wisdom. And, you know, and through that age and wisdom, we have lots of really hard, hard stuff that happens to us. And in that process, we almost become, we claim ourselves, and we go from being young girls to women. And that's where I feel that I'm at now. It's like, there just really isn't anything that scares me like I used to get scared when I was younger. And I was not a woman that was easily scared when I was younger. And, you know, and it's that beauty of getting older is recognizing a place to put that to use. And for me, if this is the promotion of women in this sport, if there's anything I would like to be known for, is not the racing career, but is to put this woman's, you know, women's cycling onto the map the way that it should be. And it's through the, you know, the collaboration of several different women. I mean, I love reading Sheryl Sandberg's book about Lean In and women coming together. And that's what I see happening. But I also see some women that are still racing, and they can't jeopardize their careers. And I get that. I understand that. But I don't have a career I have to worry about.
Right.
And so maybe through all of us, we can put the women's sport where it needs to be.
Well, I think on that note, we are going to let you get back to, you have to take care of your horsies.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to get going, but oh my gosh, what a wonderful conversation as always. Someday I'm coming halfway.
Oh, I would love it. I would love it, Diana.
I would love it too. Inga, have a wonderful holiday. We will talk again. I promise. There is no question.
Okay. Love speaking with you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's our show for the week. It was a big one. Yes, indeed.
We were all over the country and We covered a lot of ground,
east to west, north to, well, Virginia's kind of south.
The middle.
Yeah, the middle, way back in halfway Oregon. So thank you for joining us for this, our bicycle donation opportunity show. We hope you have a wonderful week. If you have a chance, go for a ride. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.